My Dear Fiona by Frances Rosenfeld. Chapter 31, Winter Solstice at Meisho. I always thought my life would be like the novels I liked to read when I was a teenager, where the heroine's life was a constantly unfolding drama, replete with emotionally charged moments and anchored in the importance of her actions, where every meaningful event was anticipated well in advance and everything turned out more or less as planned. Finding you was supposed to be a glorious professional moment, and I daydreamed of basking in the glory of compliments and approval, and savoring the pith of a prestigious career which would be undeniably earned. And then I found you. There is nothing more disorienting than a dream come true. All your struggles, your planning, your entire focus, is thus brought to its end. Nobody thinks through what they want to do with that fulfilled dream, because unconsciously we don't believe it would happen. It never looks like you planned. It feels so alien from your cherished vision you can barely recognize it, and it changes you, in ways opposite from what you'd expect. It opens you to the sudden revelation you do not know what you're doing, and you didn't when you were sure of your goals either, and the terrifying clarity that life is not what you thought. Accomplishing your dream makes you unsure of everything, trying to catch a glimpse of a future you can no longer see, and feeling your way through the unknown with fearful, trembling fingers, the same fingers which used to have surgical precision in your very secure and accomplished phase of chasing your dream. There is no wisdom in the overhyped drama of life. Wisdom has to be earned through meekness and acceptance of your ignorance. It lives in silence and in darkness, in the larger continuity of being, beyond the struggles of navigating social life, beyond the biological realm even, in the invisible connections that bind reality into a cohesive whole. I have a feeling if Denise didn't make me stay here for the dark half of the year, I would have missed this completely. There is equilibrium in this world of duality in which we've been thrown with no directions, a harmony which demands everything to be balanced by its opposite, even the light. The time of the shadow is heavy with meaning, so much so I feel like stopping every few steps on the way to ponder its weight on my life. There is not much to do in the dark but think. We retreat from the glare and the noise of activities to find our souls. Denise insisted we go to Meisho at sunset for the winter solstice, and in very uncharacteristic fashion she did all the preparations for the trip, got the tickets, packed, got the car ready, picked up warm clothes and provisions for the road. I don't know why this trip means so much to her. I always thought Denise's life ran completely on curiosity and a thirst for new experiences, and had very little room left for contemplating the mysterious, especially in stillness and silence. Wake up, Ethel. She jumped on my bed while the sun was still struggling to breach the horizon. What in places, Denise? It's the wee hours. Go back to sleep. Not at all, my liege. It's past 8. Get up, we need to get ready. Come on, wake up. She pulled off my comforter and grabbed the pillow from under my head. I got instantly aggravated and fully awake. My irritation, which meant I won't be able to go back to sleep, satisfied Denise. Why? Get dressed, we'll get breakfast and coffee and then we'll be on our way. We have the whole day, I groaned. Yep, the shortest one, all of 6 hours. I wonder if you'll still be there, Fiona, now that you have been found, and your ghost no longer needs to haunt my dreams. Denise was unusually cheerful, pouring lots of joy and excitement into the world, and yet the latter felt still and silent. The sun is very low in the islands in winter, barely 10 degrees above the horizon, and in the rare moments when it breaks through the cloud cover it casts long ethereal shadows, like a vision from another realm, the world of violet twilight. A ray of sunlight glimmered on the lock of Brodgar, painted inky shadows behind the stones of Stennis, and smudged splotches of gold on the perpetually green hills behind them. I was so taken by the mesmerizing image it didn't occur to me to ask Denise why we were taking this circuitous route, but I didn't mind. I was meant to be there to witness the transformation of time and light and be initiated in the mystery of the stone's shadows. It turns out Denise was right. We arrived to the cairn with barely enough time to park and walk in before the sunset, and rushed as I was not to miss the extraordinary phenomenon. I forgot my existential dread of being encased in a narrow passage, feeling the pressure of tons of earth and giant slabs of stone bear down on me from all sides. There were people already inside the cairn, waiting with excitement for the first ray of light to enter and illuminate the tomb. A sliver of brightness, thinner than a laser beam, hit the wall behind me, incredibly intense in the darkness of the chamber, and kept growing wider and more diffuse, until it illuminated the entire wall. Tomorrow the days will start growing longer again, always the same, year after year, in a circular continuity of being, while we insist on measuring our lives in linear fashion, for God knows what reason. This living story happened over and over, from the beginning of time, and in every iteration, light always returns. We live in this eternal seesaw of darkness and light, oblivious, tending to our urgent priorities, making plans, too blind to share in its beauty and majesty, which has no such concerns. Wake up, Groa. Wake up, good woman. I wake you at the doors of the dead. Maybe you remember that you told your child to come to the grave cairn. Did you summon me here, my princess? Did you ask me, your blood, to come to your grave cairn too? I'm in the doorway of your realm, Fiona, pondering the ironic message that it is the sunset of the shortest day of the year that illuminates its darkness. How long do you think it will take? Denise whispered in my ear, flattening my lofty awe. Why, you have somewhere to be? And the answer came, reliably, the expected answer, which always brings me back to the here and now and reminds me we're nothing but a bunch of biological processes purporting high-mindedness. And I have my sister to thank for that reality check. I'm hungry. We ate 3 hours ago. Babies eat less frequently. I'm not a baby, and the hike burned a lot of calories. I thought we were going to stay for the poetry reading. We missed that. It happened before the sunset. She looked at me, victorious. See, Ethel, that's why I woke you up early. If I didn't, you'd have missed this too. How was that possible? We intended to spend at least an hour here. We sure accounted for it in our overplanned trip, and yet, somehow time got condensed and distilled, and all that was left of it turned into the thin sliver of light which burned bright on the back wall. Have you ever noticed, Fiona, that our sense of time differs greatly from one experience to the next? Being here now altered my perspective, and for a moment, just a glance, I saw reality from the other side of the veil, and it looked very different. I don't know what to do when I'm back to my normal life with this perspective of timelessness, in which our restless mundane efforts make no dent, like the churning of the same grains of sand caught in the desert wind. Why do we live, my princess? I never asked myself this question before. Life is something you take for granted while you're in it, so much so you don't see it in its entirety, finite as we all know it to be, and plan it as a whole, rather than follow its random sequence of day-to-day choices with no direction.